Good morning. I was talking to Anthony beforehand. Can I tell him? He wanted to know if we're going to have rolls up in heaven because of that song. We are, but they're going to be called donuts, brother. Oh, should I move these biscuits? Should I move this? They're shaking their heads. No. Hey, before we get started, because we step out before the announcements at the end, tonight at 6, we're playing the adults against the youth in Bible Jeopardy, and I hope you guys could come. And Mike Croak has a message for all the young people in the church. Go ahead, Mike. What do you want to tell them? So, 6 o'clock. Hope to see you guys here. Listen, a pastor has two jobs. A pastor's two jobs are to convict the unsaved and to encourage the saints. Teach you guys God's word and where you stand with God and how important you are to God. And so today our message is called Wedding Day. Towards the end of this, Anthony is going to play a song which could actually, I could have just had him play this song and it would be the whole service. But we're going to fill in the gaps, and so we get to that point, you guys will know what's going on. So today's service is Wedding Day. It had been a long and terrible day. And darkness now covered the land, even though it was the middle of the afternoon. His time was almost up. He'd been beaten terribly. The hands that he created had punched and bruised his face and torn his beard out. The crown of thorns, which was a representation of the very first sin, back in Genesis 3:18, had been pounded into his head. His skin had been viciously torn from his body, each lash tearing open his back and ripping apart his sides and his stomach. It had been a nearly 4/10 of a mile walk from the place where he was whipped to the place where he would hang on a cross. The people that followed behind in the procession would have trouble keeping their feet because he was losing so much blood. They would be slipping in the blood as it mingled with the dirt and the dust. That he was not already dead is an unnoticed miracle in the Bible. Nails have splintered his wrists and his ankles. Nerves have been broken and scream out in agonizing pain to the dying man. He's given charge of his own mother to his disciple John instead of one of his own stepbrothers because he trusted and loved John, and now he was at the end. The agony had pierced his mom's soul. She's been following him through the last 24 hours. She's seen him beaten and nailed to the cross. The ordeal is almost over. It wasn't always that way. In fact, it started the same way it's going to end, with a wedding. John chapter 2, verses 1 and 2, in the NIV. On the third day, a wedding took place in Cana in Galilee. Jesus' mother was there, and Jesus and his disciples had been invited to the wedding. That's an important verse for you to know, Christians, and here's why. Because when a Mormon knocks on your door, they say that was Jesus' wedding. But what's it clearly say? Jesus and his disciples were invited guests at this wedding. It wasn't Jesus' wedding. Jesus never got married. Okay, at least according to the Bible. The text clearly testifies that Jesus and his disciples were invited. But it is here that Jesus' public ministry began, according to John. Now, interestingly, we all recognize this as the beginning of Jesus' ministry, public ministry, and yet John's the only gospel writer that mentions this. None of the others do. Now listen, God bless you. If you come back and play tonight, and adults, I would stay home if I was you guys to save yourselves the embarrassment. But if you guys come tonight, this is the kind of thing that might be on there, okay? It might be things like, how many of the gospel writers actually wrote about the miracle of Jesus at the wedding in Cana? Nothing will be on there that wasn't said in one of these sermons. In this account, what's going on here, we have, of course, the story of Jesus turning water into wine. It's important to note here, because I know there's all kind of teachings out there, this wasn't real wine, Jesus would never do that, and blah, 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 blah. Listen, it was real wine, okay? It wasn't grape juice, it wasn't sugared, watered down, it was real wine. And how do we know? Because the Bible tells us so. Okay. Here's how we can know this from Jewish culture. Weddings in that time would take days. And what they would do is they would bring out the good wine, and they would drink that first, and when people got inebriated, then they would bring out the cheap watered down wine, because when people got drunk, they couldn't tell the difference. But here they come to the father of the bride, and they say, "Dude, you saved the very best wine for last." One indication. Now listen, even though it was real wine, back in that day, the alcoholic content was way less than it is today. Okay, so you have to know that also. There's an interesting statement said in the middle of all this that often gets overlooked, and it's in John chapter 2, verse 6 in the New Living Translation. And these things are important. God doesn't just put words in the Bible just to talk to us. These words are important and how they relate to us and the things we do and the things we're to do as Christians. Standing nearby were six stone water jars used for Jewish ceremonial washing. Each could hold 20 to 30 gallons. The Jews would use these large vessels for ceremonial cleansing. They would cleanse themselves and make themselves clean before they would go into the temple or present their sacrifices to God. And by Jesus turning this water into wine, it points to what we call the Last Supper, communion, the wine representing the blood of Christ. See, here, until Jesus came, the way you got clean before God was to wash yourself with water. But after Jesus came, Jesus turned that water into wine. At the Last Supper, he told us that wine represents his blood. And now it's the blood of Christ that cleanses us and makes us clean. So there's all kind of interesting parallels like that when you really read the Bible. There are so many parallels in the Bible that you really have to pay attention when you're reading the Bible. And you have to pray to God to point these things out to you. This chapter of John's Gospel that we're in, chapter 2, begins with these words. John 2, 1 in the King James. "And the third day there was a marriage in Cana of Galilee." Sounds like a pretty simple statement. Back in chapter 1, we're told of Jesus' baptism by John in the River Jordan. That's what chapter 1 of John is about, after the creation story. Okay. And now here chapter 2 opens up with, "And the third day," so you have to understand how this works together. Jesus is baptized. 3 days later, Jesus' ministry begins. You seeing parallels? How long was Jesus in the ground? 3 days. Nothing happens in the Bible by accident. It all fits together. Now, this is just to show that our part in the story began with a wedding. Jesus' public ministry began at a wedding. Now we're going to leave John and go to the last book in the Bible, Revelation. Revelation chapter 19, verse 7, New American Standard Bible. "Let us rejoice and be glad and give the glory to him, for the marriage of the Lamb has come and his bride has made herself ready." Now, some of you have studied Revelation, and I hope you were taught correctly what this means. There's a lot going on here, okay? Several things you need to notice. Number one, is there going to be a rapture? Because a lot of people teach there's not going to be a rapture. There better be, because this takes place in heaven before Jesus comes back to earth. This is a wedding in heaven, a wedding supper. How do we know that the bride is the church? How do we know what we're talking about here? The church, the saved people. Many say that it's Israel. A lot of people say it's Israel. Others say that it uses this verse to say that the church has replaced Israel. Both views are wrong. 2 Corinthians 11:2 in the NIV, "I am jealous for you with a godly jealousy." Paul talking. "I promised you to one husband, to Christ, so that I might present you as a pure virgin to him." Once again, this is one of these verses where you can read it and say, what on earth is he talking about? How is he going to present the church to Christ? First, let's realize here something, okay? We're not talking about physical virginity. We're talking about spiritual purity, okay? Only those made cleansed by the blood of Christ are going to be here. Only those that have been saved by Jesus Christ are going to be at this wedding. You don't want to miss this wedding. Paul here is addressing the church. And Paul here is standing in as the best man for Jesus. This is going back to Jewish culture. And the best man had one job. And the best man's job, and you're going to see why this is important in a few seconds, was to present the bride as pure and clean to the groom on the wedding day. And so Paul here is preparing the church and telling them that the only way you're getting invited to this wedding is to be pure and clean, to be saved by the blood of Christ. We know that we're talking about spiritual purity here because the whole rest of this chapter, you can read it for yourselves, we're not going there today. The whole rest of this chapter, Paul is talking about false teachers that have come into the church and about people falling away from the truth. So we know what Paul's talking about here, spiritual purity. He's saying this to them and us through Paul's writings that never changed, okay?